What's up, all you sexy devil worshiping dickheads? This is Jeremy Spencer, aka Devil Daddy, and you're listening to Talk To Me.
What is up, everybody? Welcome into Talk To Me, episode 263. The guest this week is Jeremy Spencer, former drummer of Five Finger Death Punch, now in Psychosexual. That is a fun conversation. We get into all kinds of great stuff about him leaving Five Finger Death Punch, getting his replacement, becoming a reserve police officer, Lady Killer TV, and so much more. But to start off this episode, we've got an old friend, Josh Vargas, who is the director, producer, co-writer of a film called Hair Metal Shotgun Zombie, out in select drive-ins and video on demand now, man. How you doing, Josh?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. Actually, the title of the movie is Hair Metal Shotgun Zombie Massacre, if it wasn't obnoxious enough.
Hair Metal, man, that's too many words.
Like last night in Tennessee, it screened in Knoxville, right outside of Knoxville last night, and it's still screening there this weekend. And yeah, the title of the movie was too big to even put on the marquee.
I think that's where I wrote it down from, was the marquee. So yeah. Let's get into this movie, man. You know, how did it come about that you got in position to make a movie?
I guess for to answer that honestly, with this movie in particular, drugs and alcohol.
All right.
This was kind of like our pipe dream movie that we wanted to make. I mean, Justin and I both work in production. Justin worked for Fox for years, go figure. And I do music videos a lot. Like, that's kind of like my bread and butter, is I shoot music videos for bands.
Yeah, didn't you do the latest, one of the latest Skin Lab videos, right?
Yeah. I did the one for Dead Tomorrow. Yeah, I did one for Skin Lab. I worked with quite a few people. But yeah, so that's kind of our background. But over the years, I'd say since about 2004, we wanted to make this movie. But we figured, you know, hey, we got to, you know, make some other stuff and gain some people's trust before anybody starts throwing money at us to make something that ridiculous. It actually happened sooner than we thought. As unfortunate as it is, this movie kind of getting greenlit came about from another one going under. Initially, we were going to make a film about the making of Texas Chainsaw Massacre. If you know anything about that, the making of that movie is absolutely insane, probably crazier than the movie itself. And Marilyn Burns, who played the lead in Texas Chainsaw Massacre, was one of my good friends back when she was alive. And me, a guy named Paris Randall, who plays the burnout bass player in this movie, we're kind of, you know, we were working with her developing a script and everything was going really well, but Marilyn passed away like right in the middle of it.
Oh man.
Yeah, it was horrible. So in the middle of that, we were kind of like, okay, well, what do we do now? And I talked to my producer, Jason, who essentially said, well, do you got any other movies you want to do? And I pitched him three, one of them being Hair Metal Shotgun Zombie Massacre. And I remember when I pitched him that one, you could hear his phone drop and he just laughed his ass off and picked it back up. He's like, that's the one we're going to do. So that's how this movie came about.
Now, how long ago did you come up with the idea for Hair Metal Shotgun Zombie Massacre?
Honestly, well over a decade ago. Justin, the co-writer and co-producer, and I, we met, actually, God, we were kids, working in a haunted house here in the Houston area. And that was kind of where it started. It was like a little kind of joke kind of movie at first. But then just as time kind of rolled on, it became something I really wanted to do, to where I finally hit Justin up and I was like, hey, man, you know, I really think we should do something with hair metal. Like, I think it could make a really cool movie, especially, you know, with the concept of, like, taking some, you know, drug-addled, sex-obsessed, like, hair metal band and then putting them, like, in the Evil Dead cabin. You know,
right.
It's like, it's thinking about how that would go down, and it was hilarious, you know? So, that's kind of where we came up with that.
And what's the basic story behind the movie itself?
The title of the movie. that's another running joke, is that like the title of the movie is actually the script. It's basically about this cock rock band that goes out to this crazy, like, scary cabin in the woods that's surrounded by a graveyard to record their first album, to try to be all, you know, evil and mysterious and whatnot. And they do a bunch of coke, and they wind up in an attempt to put backwards, like, satanic messages and stuff in their music. They wind up possessing all the corpses in the cemetery with demonic spirits that then come out and try to kill them. And, you know, then shotguns come out and guitar flamethrowers come out, and it just gets nuts.
Wow. Yeah, definitely be checking this one out. And it's got a couple of cameos from Randy Bly and David Vincent in it. And how did those come about?
Yeah, they're in there. Randy Bly and David Vincent are in it. I can't really take credit for hooking that one up, actually. That they got in the movie via my late friend Corey Mitchell, who helped Phil Anselmo run the High School Horror Fest.
Okay.
Corey actually died on site on year two, I think like the day after we shot that scene.
How did he pass away?
He had a heart attack.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a big, bad situation. Corey Mitchell was like one of the coolest guys in the world. But he hooked us up with them, and David Vincent I've went on to work with on other stuff. Like, I've done a couple music videos for him and whatnot. We got Tom Araya from Slayer in there. He's got my favorite scene in the movie, which I don't want to spoil in this, but it's, am I allowed to cuss on here?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. It's fucking awesome. So, anytime we've ever screened that, the Tom Araya scene always gets like a crazy rabid response out of the audience. We've actually got Bushwick Bill from the Ghetto Boys in there, and he just died last year too, so that kind of sucks.
Maybe you should stay away from working on this movie, is what I'm getting.
Yeah, we were well, you know, the thing's been in, it's been in production for quite a while now, because we wound up having to redo post-production because of the Hurricane Harvey situation down here. Caused some bad stuff to happen, and me and Justin actually started joking at one point in time. I was like, do we got like a poltergeist curse going on here or something?
Yeah, maybe one day a couple of kids will make a movie about the making of Hair Metal Shotgun Zombie Massacre.
Oh my god. They yeah, that would be absolutely hilarious. there's a lot of, the making of the movie was absolutely insane. It was one of the most craziest and at the same time one of the most fun times I've ever had. Like blowing stuff up out in the woods, freaking out all the local townsfolk. It was great.
Now with the coronavirus COVID-19 shutting down movie theaters, and what was this originally going to be in, you know, select theaters and then go to like VOD, or, you know, was
that was always the plan? Because I mean, there, we, you know, there was a lot of people wanting to see the movie, so we kind of had that going for us. But then once the virus thing hit, it kind of screwed up all of our plans, and the people distributing it just kind of wanted to take it to the, or at least what's left of the film markets this year, just kind of put it on VOD because there's not a lot of stuff coming out right now. Basically like all productions essentially halted back in March. So there's not really any movie shooting or TV shooting or anything like that. So they were kind of craving some original content, but it would have put us in the position that it just would have went straight to VOD, and that'd have been the end of it. And we weren't really happy with that. So essentially we talked them into letting us do like a drive-in theatrical release, as long as we did it ourselves and didn't need anything from them, which is what we're in the middle of doing now.
And how have you heard any reviews from the showing? I guess it's in Maryville, Tennessee. I guess it's near Knoxville. You know, how did that go over?
It went great. It went great. Yeah, I had a couple friends that were there. Actually, one of the guys, I worked on a down video called We Knew Him Well. And one of the guys that worked on that happened to be at that theater last night. So he kind of gave me a play-by-play on it. And yeah, it went well. There's a lot of people. He said the audience reacted really well. I mean, it's one of those movies to where, like, I mean, pretty much anybody can find something enjoyable out of it, even if you don't like you know, cheesy splatter movies or anything like that, you can at least laugh at it. You know, like, we're in on the joke.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, it seemed to be fun, man. And now, what's the, how many drive-in theaters have you found that, that will play the movie?
Quite a bit. We're doing it in waves. We're not really, we don't have the manpower to kind of release them across the board, you know, on one specific day. So we're kind of treating it like a tour. So we're going from city to city to city to city. And, you know, as it stands right now with the COVID-19 situation, it's kind of like playing whack-a-mole. Like, we just here over the last week, we just lost all of our California dates because California was going to shut back down again.
Wow.
So we got to do that one at a later point in time. That's why we're keeping it out in theaters later than usual. Usually, you know, when a movie hits theaters, it's got, if it does half decent, you know, it's got a week, maybe two of a shelf life. Versus what we're doing, where it's going to be out there for a few months. And then once we've pretty much shown it everywhere and given everybody an opportunity to see it on the big screen, that's when we'll take it and we'll start moving towards VOD and stuff like that.
It's almost similar to the last, the last Jay and Silent Bob movie where they kind of toured it. And, you know, obviously you get to see them there too, but, you know, you go check out the movie. And then I think if I remember correctly, after they showed it their time when they were there, they left it there for like a week or two, and then they moved on, you know, they moved on to the next town and kind of did that rather than, you know, just doing it all in one weekend.
Yeah, exactly. And that's pretty much what we're doing. I mean, we've got theaters in Sweden that are going to show it. We've got theaters in Germany that are going to show it. I mean, eventually it's going to get everywhere.
Right.
And then, like I said, after that, we'll move towards like VOD or DVD. DVD is just really kind of not a big priority, I guess, at the moment, because like hardly anybody buys them anymore, you know?
Right.
So it'll definitely be VOD before DVD. And then if there's enough people that really like the movie and actually want a physical DVD, you know, we'll move towards that.
So this episode should be out by the end of this month. So when do you have a schedule of what some of the upcoming drive-in theaters are?
Well, I know we finish up in Tennessee this weekend, or we finish up in Knoxville this weekend. I know sometime in the fall we're double back and we're going to play in Memphis. I know next week, the entire week, it'll be in New Orleans. So yeah, I'll be playing there pretty much the entire week and next week. And then I think Austin, Texas is next after that. And that's all we've announced so far. So, cause California was supposed to follow immediately after that, but you know, California closed down again. So we're kind of trying to fill that spot. That's what I mean. It's literally like me and two other guys like working on all this. So it's kind of nuts.
Oh, I bet, man. Are you having to send like is this where you just send a file to these drive-ins, or is this physical, like, an 8-16 millimeter film? You know, how is this, how do they work these days?
Well, nobody really shoots on film anymore. I mean, like Christopher Nolan and Quentin Tarantino, I think, are kind of like the Lone Rangers now when it comes to shooting on film. So, I mean, we shoot everything in HD. As far as like how we send it to the theaters, most of them want what they call a DCP, which is it's a digital cinema package, which is basically like a digital film reel. Like, it's frame by frame with synced audio and stuff like that. Some of the pop-up drive-ins, like another one we're playing in Austin, I think they just show off of like MOVs or MKVs or MP4s or whatever. I think some of them are even playing off a DVD, which I thought was kind of weird. but mainly we send it around in DCP format. So we have a hard drive that just gallops around the country from theater to theater.
Nice.
And eventually it'll make its way back home.
Well, is there any plans for Hair Metal Shotgun Zombie Massacre 2, or, you know, is it a wrap up at the end of the movie, or?
Absolutely. We've got three, you know, planned, but we're hoping we can at least get to part two. Yeah, part two, we've already got, I probably can't say it publicly right now as far as like some of the people that want to be in it. But yeah, part two is actually called Hair Metal Crossbow Vampire Massacre. Nice. And it's, if we get to make that one, we always said that part one's kind of like just the chips and salsa to get to part two, which everything's like 175% crazier in part two. But there's some pretty interesting people that want to be in that one. Even in this one, you know, everybody had just mentioned, plus Norman Reedus from The Walking Dead, like he did the opening narration to the movie, and he's a super cool guy. It's all depends on how good this one does. And if it keeps going the way it's going now, we'll be able to make part two.
Awesome. Well, man, if you need a podcaster / interviewer to be killed in the movie, let me know and I'll make it down to the Houston area.
Absolutely. We were actually even thinking about doing something like that, because in part two, there is this giant freaking like concert massacre sequence that takes place at a castle. And we were even thinking about maybe instead of like going to casting agencies and stuff, which I really am not, they're kind of like a necessary evil,
right?
You know, in the film world, but I don't really like them. So we were even thinking about doing something like that, like just putting it out in like the metal news and stuff, like, hey, if you want to die in a horror movie with a bunch of rock stars, like come on down to come down to Houston, Texas, and we'll bloody you up.
Sweet. Yeah, that'd be a lot of fun, man. Well, anything else you want to say about the movie before we get out of here? What's the best way to, keep up with the movie? Is a website, Facebook, all that good stuff?
Yeah, our social media is pretty good as far as keeping up with updates. So, I mean, if you add us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, any of that, you know, Facebook, you know, /HMSZM, and then Twitter, it's the same thing, but official. So HMSZM official, at Twitter. So you can find all that stuff there.
All right, man. Well, Josh, man, thanks for taking the time today, and good luck with the movie.
Hey, man, thanks for having us.
We've got Jeremy Spencer of Psychosexual, former Five Finger Death Punch drummer, on the line. Album Torch the Faith out July 31st. Man, Jeremy, how you doing?
Doing great, man. Lots of writing and recording during these weird times, but things are working out, so it's all good. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. I grew up in the Owensboro, Kentucky area when I was really little, and it's funny hearing that you're from the Evansville area. And as a kid, going to the Eastland Mall was like a treat, man. That was like we're going to go to the big time if we went to the Eastland Mall.
For sure. I loved it. There was a store called Kaleidoscope. Do you remember that?
I vaguely remember stuff like that. Yeah. I mean, we moved away from there when I was around 9 or 10. So it was probably more like the KB Toys or something I was into.
Oh, right. Yeah. That was a cool mall. I was also in the Owensboro Youth Symphony Orchestra for like 1 year one time. So
oh, nice.
So we're definitely tied there as well.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I get to go to the, in Owensboro, they had like the Money Tree. And I think that's where I bought my first ever Kiss record on vinyl.
Love it, man. Which one was it?
Gene Simmons' solo album. I just wanted the cover. Cover was
Me
so
too.
Cool.
I got mine at Surface Merchandise in the cutout bin for 99 cents, and I was so stoked that I got it home and it skipped.
Oh, man.
And I was fucking devastated, man. And I returned it to Surface Merchandise, and they were out of Gene, so I got Paul's instead. And then so that was like my first introduction to having my own Kiss record.
Nice, nice. Yeah, definitely got into, you know, Double Platinum and all that stuff around them. But yeah, first ever purchase was Gene Simmons' solo album. He was just the coolest man. But kind of going into a timeline a little bit here, but you know, leaving Five Finger Death Punch, and I know you had to do it for your back and for medical reasons, but I mean, knowing that you had to leave and even helping get your replacement in the band, you know, how tough was that on you to do?
It wasn't tough. I had physically reached a point to where I wasn't being able to perform the way I like to perform. And I had done it for so many years and hurt myself so much doing it. I really enjoyed the time, but it just, you know, it was obvious that it's like, okay, athletes retire at certain points because their bodies aren't working. And, you know, you do anything for 14 years, it starts to grind you down mentally too. So I knew it was the perfect time for the exit, and I found the perfect replacement, I felt, in Charlie, and brought him to the band and helped get him as prepared as I could by, you know, giving him like videos and recordings and things like that. And he stepped right in and killed it, man. He's doing great. I think he's working out great for them, and I'm very, very happy for him and for them as well.
With the with getting him in the band, you know, how did you hear of him? Was it just like how we all heard of him, was through Instagram and YouTube and stuff?
Yeah, it was Instagram. I was just like, man, this dude shreds. I always like watching his videos every day. And then we just started communicating. And whenever I knew that I was going to be stepping out, I was like, I bet you this dude would be able to slay this. So I hit him up and I'm like, hey, you want to come out on the road and meet the guys for a couple of days? And so he came out and he's basically auditioned in sound checks, and everyone just dug him and dug his vibe, and that was that.
Yeah, I think you're one of the few people that's ever really gotten to almost handpick the replacements.
Yeah, it's not common. I think I'm not even for sure how fortunate they are that they got hand gifted their replacement, because having to hold auditions and stuff, that's not easy, man. Like, we had to do that in the past for, you know, the bass player position and stuff like that. And, you know, it gets old pretty quick when you have to just meet 15 people and keep jamming songs and checking their vibe. It wears you out fast. So it's like when Chris Cale came in the band, we were like, yes, he's perfect. Done. We're done with the search, you know?
That's awesome, man. Yeah, I've known Chris since the 90s. So, I remember getting the text when he told me that he got the Five Finger gig. So, you know, just getting him in the band, you know, I know him personally, so I know his persistence, and I know it was through, you know, almost like Facebook Messenger. He's like, hey man, I'm your guy kind of stuff, and, you know, kind of came in with a confidence.
Yeah, he was great, man. He stepped in and he was very confident and very cool, and he sang really well, and that's what separated him, man. Like, he could play and sing really well.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I did some shows with his old band Cut Love Kill back in the day. So,
I remember hearing about that.
Yeah, you know, and then after you leave Five Finger, you know, one of the first things that pops up is you become a reserve police officer. Have you been on the beat yet? Have you been out there, you know, catching the bad guys?
I have not caught any bad guys. I went there and got certified. I went through the training, and then I immediately, like 3 days later, was home in the hospital getting my back surgery.
Right.
And I was on the couch pretty much for about 6 months. I couldn't do anything. So it's been a slow recovery, but now I'm physically able to do it. But as soon as I was ready to do it, then the pandemic happened, and they're like, everything's cut back. They're not doing as much. Like, you rarely pull people over unless you can tell that they are drinking and driving and things like that.
Right.
So it's not there's really no need for me back there yet, but I will go back and do it. I just haven't had to do it yet.
Now, I assume that, you know, obviously you're very recognizable, you know, with the tattoos and everything. So I could just see you pulling someone over, and then they'd be like, wait a minute, aren't you the dude from Five Finger Death Punch? You know, what are you doing right now?
Yeah, it's funny, because when I went back there to do the training, like, I went to the jail and I went in the cell and shook hands with the inmates, and they were all happy to see the dude from Five Finger. You know, that was pretty cool.
You signing autographs, and they're like, you can't be, you know, you can't mingle with the inmates or whatever.
Yeah, it was cool. I just, you know, they were happy to have somebody in there, I guess, you know, and the fact that it was a guy from Five Finger, I guess, was even cooler for them.
Now, with the psychosexual stuff kind of popping up, you know, what is the antithesis of doing this? You know, what was your grand idea here? Because there's a lot going on.
Yeah, well, I have been making music on my own for years, and some of the earlier recordings were more kind of new wave, like 80s influenced stuff. And then I wanted to put a band together and make it a little darker and heavier, and because I miss playing live, you know, but I've never been a front man, and I wanted to do that because it's stimulating, it's new, and it's exciting. But, you know, I've always been a fan of theatrical bands like Kiss, and, you know, and then when Ghost came along, I thought that was cool. So it's about putting on a show. So as soon as we can do that, as soon as people are allowed to play again, we're going to do it. But in the meantime, we've been writing and recording our asses off, and I'm happy with the way it's turning out. I know it's freaked a lot of people out because it's so different, but we've also had a lot of positive response and a lot of open-mindedness and people that are like, wow, this is different. I wouldn't have expected this from you, but I'm digging it. So it's very cool.
Yeah, the one, I believe it's called Lady Killer, kind of had a like a heavy new wave vibe. That makes sense.
For sure. It was kind of a blend of that. And that's what I'm going for. You know, like I love heavy riffs and high energy, but I also like that new wave flavor, like Gary Numan and you know, Bowie tapped on the new wave stuff. And those are huge influences. And I'm big fans. You know, I'm a big fan of those guys.
Well, with a band like this too, I mean, with being so visual, you know, it kind of lends itself to coming out in a time like this where you can't do a ton of live shows, but you can continue to put together music videos.
Yeah, and we've certainly been doing our share of that. We filmed 6 videos already for the first record, and since then, like, we've recorded a cover EP, and we're almost done with the second album. So this quarantine's been a blessing because we've got a lot of work done.
Yeah, it seems like you guys have been churning out stuff. I watched, I think, 3 videos today, and then I saw the news that Kenny Hickey will be on the album. How did that collaboration come together?
Well, my co-producer and guitar player was going to work with his band Silvertomb. I don't think it ever happened, but he met him through that experience. So then we hit him up, and we sent him the track. He's like, sure, man, I'd love to be a part of it. So,
you know, the one thing watching the videos and the common theme of kind of, you know, the religious theme throughout the entire thing, you know, where it almost kind of harkens back to an older time in metal, to where, you know, like a burning church and, you know, doing metal in church, but there's, you know, flames and things like that, you know, it kind of harkens back to that old school Motley Crue and all that. And it's almost kind of refreshing to see kind of that evil back in metal.
Yes, thank you. And that's certainly what we're going for. I was a huge fan of all that stuff growing up. And it's funny. Theatrics are, I think it's vital for shows. I mean, you can watch people stand there and play their instruments, but that's been done a trillion times. So I think it's cool to have characters and fire and cool shit. You know, I mean, it's just stuff to look at.
Now, you're putting this out on your own imprint. Are you planning on putting out other bands too, or is it just like, you know, a vehicle to put out Psychosexual?
So far, it's just a vehicle to put out our records. And, you know, the reason behind it is because I just don't see the point in giving away the masters or being in debt to a label. That's all they are, is a loan. You know, I mean, what are they going to do? Hit up Spotify? I can do that.
Right.
So there's no point in giving away everything these days. It's totally changed that you don't need labels at all anymore.
Kind of going back to Five Finger, and obviously you were there from the beginning. You know, is it still crazy to you how big that band became?
Looking back on it now, yeah. At the time, you're so wrapped up in the daily bubble of it, you don't really see it happening. But then you'll take a break and come back, and all of a sudden you're playing a huge festival, and you're like, shit, man, this thing's growing fast. I remember playing the Download Festival for the first time, and there was 90,000 people there, and I was like, shit, man, no wonder I'm a little nervous. That's a lot of bodies, man.
Yeah, I currently live in Louisville, but when Chris joined, you know, I came out to I drove out to Evansville to the Ford Center, and I was like, wow, you know, he's already in an arena. You know, and I remember, I think that night they said that you know, I think that's where I learned that you were from that area, because they said, you know, hometown boy did good kind of thing. And then every time I go see him now, it's just like, I still kind of look around and I'm like, wow, this is insane. You know how, you know, I saw him a couple summers ago with Breaking Benjamin, and turn around, the entire venue is, you know, 20,000 people strong. And it's still crazy to see, you know, your friend up there playing in front of that many people and how big the band has become.
Yeah, it really is crazy, man. And the thing about Death Punch is that we got in right at a time where people still bought records, but then stopped. So we were like one of the last bands to actually sell some records in metal, which was nice, because now everyone just streams shit. But they bought physical records, and you know, we were fortunate enough to sell them in a day and age where nobody was buying fucking records anymore, you know. So we were very fortunate.
And the thing with, you know, you're talking about with Psychosexual, the theatrics, but I mean, that's one thing with Death Punch too, is the stage show is very big. You know, I think for the Trespass America was the first thing I ever saw, and you had giant video screens, and, you know, all the way up to now, there's, you know, like tons of pyro and stage sets. And, you know, even you with the, you know, the skeleton, you know, get up and things like that. Just, it's a very visual show. And you know, how much a part of that was from you?
Well, I certainly tried to bump up my area. Like, I had huge drum kits, and I started doing the skeleton, painting my face and wearing masks. I just thought, we need to make this as exciting for people as possible, so they leave there going, what an experience. You have to go see that thing. It was fucking awesome. So that's that, you know, I did my best on making my character, and it wasn't convenient all the time wearing those stupid suits and the makeup, but
right.
it looked cool from 20 feet away and on video. So it was cool. But I actually sold some of those skeleton suits the other day. So the stage worn suits, somebody wanted to buy them. So I sold them.
Nice. And you're also selling some drum kits out there too. Tell me about that.
Yeah, I've sold four. I just had fucking so many kits stacked floor to ceiling that you couldn't even walk, and it's like, well, what am I doing with this? There's no place to set up and play them. I'm gonna get rid of them, and damn, it's just happened real fast. So I guess people were, you know, hungry to get some kits that they saw on tour or something years ago, but whatever the reason, they've been selling them. I'm certainly grateful that people are into it.
Yeah, and you know, a drum kit's not something easy just to donate to a, you know, Hard Rock Cafe or something. You know, like, I've seen, you know, some drum kits, but they're like a 4-piece kit. You know, you're not going to have a Jeremy Spencer entire wall. You know.
Yeah, the cases there certainly aren't big enough for that. I mean, we had tried to. I think Death Punch has some stuff in one of the Hard Rocks, but certainly not a drum kit. I know that.
And they, you know, kind of getting into some other stuff you did, the Lady Killer TV, you know, tell me a little bit about what's going on with that and you know, you getting into all that.
Well, it started out as an idea to do a television series that would be late night HBO Cinemax kind of deal, because, you know, there's nudity and there's sex, even though it's not like porn where there's no penetration or anything, but there's certainly a lot of sexy scenes, and the violence is pretty gory and pretty fun. You know, it's basically parodies of classic horror films and with sex, and then the girls end up killing the guys. That's the spin on it, you know.
Nice.
So like the psycho shower scene, she ends up killing Norman Bates instead of him killing her, you know. But now it's kind of turned into feature films. Like, I cannibalized all the stuff we shot, and then I shot story around it and turned them into movies. So they'll be coming out. I have three feature films that will be coming out, and I'll announce all that when it's time. But so it's turned into movies rather than a TV series.
So do you feel like you've been more active since you've been out of Death Punch than maybe when you were in the machine that is Five Finger Death Punch?
No. Well, I mean, I'm not interrupted by that daily job. I was doing my stuff while I was doing Death Punch as well. But now I have all 100% time to focus on that, because, you know, you have a lot of time on tour where there's downtime. So once interviews and meet and greets are over, you're sitting there rotting. So I would just do work and shit and write and do stuff for me. But now that that's freed up, I'm just grinding every second of my life on my projects, and I'm loving it. I'm happier than ever.
Now, kind of going back to the Evansville connection that we have, you know, growing up in that area, getting into, you know, like Kiss and things like that, did you go to like Robert Stadium and check out shows when they came through and all that?
All the time. I loved it. I lived for it. I went to as many concerts as I could. And I remember the Kiss Dynasty tour. I was 6 years old and my parents wouldn't let me go. And I was fucking pissed. I was like, why? My friends are going. Why? They just didn't get it. But my first concert ended up being Hall & Oates. And I was like, what the fuck is a Hall & Oates? But I went there and they ruled, man. They have so many great songs and they killed it. They were great players and great singers. And that kind of launched my whole concert experience. But then I saw all every rock and metal concert I could after, because my parents knew there was no stopping me.
Yeah, the to Hall & Oates, I remember being a kid and hearing Maneater on the radio and almost taking it literal. I'm like, she's a man-eater. Like, she truly eats men. And I was like, that it scared the shit out of me as a kid.
I know, and it's a happy melody and shit. It's so funny, man. But yeah, if those lyrics are definitely odd for a pop song.
I'm trying to think. So were you at the Ozzy Metallica gig where James, you know, broke his arm skateboarding in Evansville?
I was not at that gig, and I remember hearing about it. It was before I was a Metallica fan. I became a fan right, like, probably within 6 months of that show. So I missed that show. I didn't see it. But then, of course, once I discovered Metallica, that altered my life because of the double bass and stuff like that. It was like, wow, you can do that with your feet. That's incredible. So that kind of changed my life musically right then.
Getting into, you know, how are you getting into music out there? What were you reading? What were you listening to, you know, getting into metal in the Midwest?
Well, everything started with Kiss, just like so many people. And then, you know, I got into, like, what was on the radio was the 80s pop and new wave stuff, like all that shit, Duran Duran, Devo, all that stuff. I was into all that stuff too. But then Prince became a big part of my life. I was blown away by all that stuff. And then I discovered Metallica, Slayer, Ozzy, all the cool metal bands that pretty much everyone, you know, those are the big ones and everyone loved those bands, but it was the same for me. And then I started discovering, you know, death metal and bands like, you know, Death and Cannibal Corpse, Deicide, all that stuff. So I was into all of that stuff, but I was definitely open-minded and especially musically, there was just so many different flavors that I was into.
And what bands were you in before Five Finger? Because, I mean, there's so many iterations of all you guys seem to have come from somewhere else. That makes
the
sense.
The only band the only band you would have heard of was, I auditioned for Wasp.
Nice.
And I was hired and I was getting ready to go on a European tour with them. But their drummer, who had been there for like 12 years or something, I guess was calling saying, please let me come back or whatever. So they just ended up bringing him back rather than working a new guy. And I remember I was like, fuck, I was bummed, man. Cause I thought, all right, I get out of a day job and now I get to go finally tour and do what I've always been working my ass off to do. And then it fell through. But right after is when Death Punch happened. So I guess it was meant to be.
Yeah. That was like, you're like, damn it. I almost made it. Well, I guess I'll go do Five Finger Death Punch.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was like, what the fuck am I going to do now? I've been trying to do music in L.A. for 15 fucking years. You get really close, and then it would fall through, and you just heartbreak after heartbreak, like so many musicians. I mean, it's happened to so many people. That's the story. And I punched up on musicconnection.com, like, shredding double bass drummer or something, and then Zoltan's ad came up looking for a drummer. So that's how we kind of started this thing. Like, I hit him up and he showed me some demos, and then we got together and started working on shit. And then we started recording the record, just the two of us, before we had any of the rest of the members.
Wow. The, Zoltan story, man, I've listened to him on a few podcasts, just kind of talking about coming from, where is he from? Like Hungary or something, just like some crazy country where, you know, you have to escape to get out, and, you know, to come here and become one of the biggest metal bands of all time is a pretty amazing story.
Yeah, he's from Hungary. Definitely a cool story. I've you know, I've listened to it many times on the bus.
I bet. And then, you know, getting Death Punch going, getting it out there, you know, getting signed, getting the record deal. And then the Bleeding is the first big single, and then the Bad Company cover, and just, you know, it just seemed like one thing after another, man. And the next thing you know, you guys are headlining every single festival coming through town.
It was crazy. It moved fast. We made the record ourselves. Then the label picked it up, released it as is, and put us on tour on the Korn Family Values tour a couple months later. Then we went right into arenas supporting Korn, then supporting Disturbed. It just kept steam rolling and snowballing, getting better, bigger and bigger.
Now, I read this quote the other day from, I think it was one of the guys in Nickelback, and he said something about, you know, how he can't believe that that band became so controversial and kind of the butt of so many jokes. And I know, you know, Chris will share the memes, and I know you've seen the memes and stuff, and Five Finger's obviously a very...
They're a fucking hated band. You can say very, we were hated.
Well, I guess decisive, or is it divisive band? You know, very hated band. Yeah. You know, it's like you either are like a, you know, Five Finger Death Punch fans are hardcore, will fight you if you say a bad word about, you know, Ivan. But, you know, a Five Finger Death Punch hater is almost the exact, you know, on the other side of the pendulum, too. It's crazy how you know, hated the Five Finger became.
Well, it's to be expected. When bands get popular, they're the target. And, you know, we got popular fast, and people certainly let us hear their distaste for it. But, and, you know, I get it. I understand. I took it with a grain of salt. I mean, when you get hated on constantly, you're like, whoa, what the fuck? But then you just kind of realize what it's all about, and you can't get too wrapped up in that shit. Some of it's really funny. If they're creative and they dog you, I think that's great. When it's bonehead and they dog you, that loses my interest real fast. But when they say funny shit that's really creative and well thought out, I always like thought I got a kick out of it. But yeah, we were definitely a target, and it's to be, you know, you understand why we came out of nowhere and got big fast. So people are like, fuck that band, you know, whatever.
Yeah,
they don't play blast beats and fucking scream and say shit that you can't recognize and confuse people with time signatures, so they suck,
right?
You know, try writing a song that connects with people. Let's see what you got, you know what I mean? It's not easy.
That is true, man. And of all things, man, Ivan has one of the better voices in rock, man. It's distinctive, and it's so good.
Yeah, I mean, that dude is the real deal. He a great performer. He wears his heart on his sleeve. You definitely tell when he's pissed off, and you hear it in his voice and in his lyrics. And the dude's a super talent. You can't deny it. I mean, you may not dig the tough guy stuff, but the dude performs his ass off, and he does it well. I kudos to him, man. He's certainly helped get us to where we fucking went, for sure. He's a major part of it.
And with you leaving the way you did, I mean, I'm assuming you're still on good terms with all those guys.
Well, I talk to Jason every day, pretty much. We're neighbors, so we've been friends way before the band for like 25 years now. So I talk to Kale sometimes. I've talked to Zoe a few times. Everyone's kind of busy doing their thing, and but yeah, everything's all good. It's just, you know, we don't talk every day like we used to. It was, you know, we saw each other every day then, but now we're, you know, we're fucking 50 years old, and we live our own life.
Right. What was kind of the obviously you said, you know, you got the Korn gigs early and things like that, but what was kind of one of the first gigs where you walked out and you're like, holy shit, this is real. Like, you know, we've really become that band.
Well, I would say probably, well, even on the Family Values tour, it was like every day more and more people were showing up to the parking lot. Like, they started that B stage, because we had the same management. So that was kind of a helpful thing for us. We got to play every morning in the parking lot, and then it started growing and growing. So I was like, shit, this is real. And then we moved right into an arena right after. So then you're like, shit, this is happening. This is really happening. But the thing that really clicked in for me is when we played that Download Festival, when there were 90,000, And that energy wave was so overwhelming, man. I'll never forget it. I was like, holy shit, that's a lot of people. That ruled. That was probably one of the biggest highs you can ever experience.
Now, I remember Chris talking on here years ago when he came on, talking about you guys playing with Kiss and, you know, just that being an amazing moment for him. You know, what was that like for you?
It was incredible, except the crowd, they're an older crowd, and they're there to see Kiss, and we're coming out opening with Way of the Fist with fucking 191 BPM and double bass, and they're looking at us like, what the fuck is this? But it was cool, and we got to stand on the side of the stage and watch Kiss every night, but they shoot so much fucking pyro, you start getting like PTSD and fucking freaking out. I'm like, I gotta get out of here after a while. But it ruled, man. I mean, it was a childhood dream, and they were cool guys. So that was like, wow, we got to fucking open for Kiss. That rules.
Yeah, man. You don't want to be like James Hetfield and be standing on the pyro when it goes off.
Now, we were definitely in a safe spot, but it's so loud it just jars the shit out of you. So you're like, I can only take so much of this.
Well, man, as we wrap this one up, man, Psychosexual, like we said, Torch the Faith out July 31st, man. You know, what are your, I guess, as we get closer, and obviously you can't do live shows, so what are your plans kind of going forward?
We will do a live streaming show. I'll announce all that whenever it's time. And then we'll just keep continuing to make videos and make records until we can get out and properly tour. But there'll be a live show that you can stream. And I'll give all those details as soon as I can. But you can go check out the website, psychosexualmusic.com, and get info there.
All right, Jeremy, man. Well, it's been great. And what psychosexual song would you like us to end this off with?
Let's play Baby on Fire.
My rod is a thrust. The penetrating force of my venom shall shatter the sanctity of that mind which is barren of lust. In the name of the great god Pan, may my secret thoughts be marshaled into the movements of the flesh of that which I desire. Hail psychosexual!
Little baby, you drive me crazy. You make me.
you to Jeremy Spencer for taking the time. That was a lot of fun, kind of going down memory lane. Not a lot of people you can talk to about the Eastland Mall in Evansville, Indiana, that's going to know it so well. But yeah, as a very little kid, man, I remember around Christmas, we drove over to Evansville, and it was like the biggest deal to go to the Eastland Mall, even though we had the Town Square Mall, which I think is, it has either closed down or it is close to closing down. And if you're super hardcore old school Owensboro, you might even remember the Lincoln Mall. That's way, way gone. I think it's like a church now. Imagine that. A former mall in Kentucky turning into a church. But with that being said, make sure to check out Psychosexual. Check out what Jeremy's doing in his post Five Finger Death Punch career. Also, a huge thank you to Josh Vargas for coming on talking about his movie, Hair Metal Shotgun Zombie Massacre. Make sure to go check it out if it's in a drive-in or a movie theater near you. After our chat, we talked for a little bit longer, and I have known Josh since around 98. We did about 2-week tour right out of high school, and we played in Jackson, Mississippi at this outdoor venue that was just basically an old, like, railroad. I don't know. There was like a railroad track or something going across the top of it and stuff. It was pretty insane. One of the cooler shows I've ever seen, or one of the cooler venues we ever played. We've got some of that stuff on VHS somewhere, so I'm going to have to drag it out and get it transferred over to this digital age. So yeah, so support Josh in his venture in Hair Metal Shotgun Zombie Massacre. Make sure you're supporting Jeremy Spencer. And also make sure you're checking me out live Tuesday nights, Facebook and YouTube, 9 p.m. Eastern. We've been having a lot of fun with those shows. Just recently put out an episode with John Drake and Roe Coley. Very, very nerdy episode talking Star Wars and Back to the Future. And we put together our greatest super groups and so much more. So that was a lot of fun. So yeah, so make sure to check that out Tuesday nights, Facebook, YouTube, subscribe, rate, review, all that good stuff. And you will not miss a moment of Talk To Me Live on video. Check that out. And so for the Talk To Me podcast, I am Joshua Toomey, and I will talk to you guys soon.